Welcome to Shrink Wrap, a podcast where Fran and Becky give proper respect to various mental health and wellness topics
while adding in a little bit of smart assery that they just can't seem to contain.
This podcast cannot and does not constitute therapy advice.
However, we do hope that you find the information we share with you helpful and entertaining.
Please be advised that this podcast discusses topics that can be sensitive to some listeners. Use appropriate discretion.
Hey, everybody. Welcome.
Welcome.
It's recording day.
Yay. I'm ready for it.
Let's do it.
I am so ready for it.
Do it.
Yes, let's do it. Okay. Random question of the day. Favorite 80s rock band, Brody?
Ooh, AC/DC.
Ooh.
No. Yes. Yes.
What? Yes or no?
Yes. AC/DC.
Becky?
This is not my favorite, but I'm going to say it for comedic value. Rick Astley.
I'm never going to give you up. I'm never going to let you down. I used to think he was so cute. I did. He had such a deep, sexy, husky voice.
Can we talk about for the second, like you hear the song and you're like, I think of somebody like Brody singing it. Like,
yes.
But then all of a sudden this guy who weighs a buck 20 and is like 6'5".
Soaking wet with his pockets full of loonies and tunies.
Yeah. I'm like, wait, what?
See, I thought he was cute.
How about yours?
Queen. Duh.
Oh, there we go. That's Queen. A good one.
See, I think they're more
70s.
Yeah, probably.
But you know what? I love Queen so much, and I'm not lying about this. When I die and there's a celebration of life, two people will show up. But anyway, I am totally going to play Another One Bites the Dust.
Can you call it
a celebration? Yes.
Can we call it a celebration of life / death? Because maybe some people want to come celebrate your death.
Sure, absolutely. I'm flexible.
Your attendance is going to go up that way.
Right?
So, yeah.
Oh my God. Now we have no standing room only because of that. But okay, what I love about Queen even more is the guitarist, the co-founder, Brian May. He's an astrophysicist.
Oh, that's awesome.
And he actually consulted with NASA to get us on an asteroid. No shit.
Huh. You as in Mark and Fran?
No. Oh, okay. Yes, our entire extended family.
And Fran's like, and it only cost us $300,000 each. But it was a bargain.
Now we own an asteroid, so yeah. How could it be bad?
Move over, really Elon cool. Musk. Yeah.
That's funny.
Oh, God. All right, what are we talking about,
Becky Boo? Oh, my goodness. Oh, something near and dear to a lot of people, sleep disorders. But more specifically, we're going to talk about night terrors and sleep paralysis.
All right, let's go.
Super fun. Mm-hmm.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Frantastic Factoid.
The prevalence of sleep disorders, such as narcolepsy and obstructive sleep apnea, increased between the years of 2013 to 2016, according to study findings in the Journal of Clinical Sleep Medicine. Another type of sleep disorder is a night terror. We're going to talk about that. Mm-hmm. And this is something that happens when Jim wants to have sex with Becky.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a different type of terror. But yeah, I get what you're saying.
But you know, it usually happens in the night. But
usually, yeah.
Yeah. So there is another one, which we really don't cover today, but I think it's fascinating. It's the sleep eating disorder.
Mm. Heard of that.
Right? Where you get up in the middle of the night, you're eating, you have no recollection of it the next day.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. I think I've had a client or two that has done that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah.
That would freak me out.
So night terrors, also called sleep terrors, occur during non-REM sleep, and they usually happen during the first 3 to 4 hours of the night.
Fun fact, Allison used to have these.
Really?
My mother used to have these.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Allison was young. I mean, like young, 4, 5, 6, around in there. Mm-hmm. It was, and as we talk about it, it was terrifying because you could not wake her up and she was losing her shit. It wouldn't last very long, as we'll talk about, but how long did they last for your mom?
A couple years, I think. She was a young girl as well. And so I remember vividly her like telling us about it. It was like little creatures made of wood, like coming up stairs from our childhood home and like peering around the corner of the door. But I think it was only a couple of years, but
Allison's didn't last very long either. But here's the funny thing. So I was a brand new clinician, right? Mm-hmm. Brand new master's. And I'm at a PESI conference or something and on bipolar and depression. And the lady says, and a common factor amongst people with bipolar is night terrors.
Oh,
great. My 5-year-old's fucked.
Yeah,
here
paranoia
we go.
Will destroy ya.
I have never found anything to substantiate that. So I just thought she was smart, but I don't know. A person experiencing a night terror will suddenly begin to show signs of panic and terror while sleeping, such as screaming, flailing, or kicking. Other common symptoms include a rapid heart rate and rapid breathing, flushing of the skin, sweating, pupil dilation, and muscle tensing.
Oh. And you know, what you want to do, of course, is comfort your child, yeah. You know, because obviously they're terrified, right? And that's really not what you're supposed to mm-hmm. do. You know, you're not supposed to wake them up. If you do that, they mm-hmm. may attempt to fight you or escape, and then they can actually hurt themselves more or hurt them, you know, like a kid run yeah. away, fall down the stairs, oh. or actually I've had a parent like get a black eye from trying to wake up their kid. They just oh. put, yeah.
Yeah.
It can happen.
Most of them only last about 10 minutes, and Allison's were always super short too, but they can last for 30 to 40 minutes in some children. And after the episode, children often fall back into a deep sleep and typically have no memory of the night terror the next morning. Thank goodness. Oh, I'm glad there was no memory. The frequency of night terrors varies. Some children may experience them very rarely, while others may have 1 to 2 episodes per month. And I'm thinking back, and I don't think she had more than maybe 3. Thank God.
You know what would freak me out?
What?
Is if your kid is having a night terror and you go in the room and they go, red rum, red rum.
I can't even... Here's what she did do to us.
Oh my God.
Jim and I are watching The Ring. Do you remember that movie? Yeah. And then you'd watch the video and then the nosebleed. And we hear toot, 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 Allison coming down the stairs. So we hit pause because we don't want to. And so she lays down and we're comforting her. And all of a sudden we look over and she's got a bloody nose and it's just trickling. Yeah. And Jim and I look at each other and we're like,
So, Allison, was freaky. You don't know what her night terrors were? Like what she was seeing?
Well, no, because she didn't remember him the next day.
She would just wake up screaming bloody murder. Not yeah. even wake up, but just screaming bloody murder.
And we would go
murder.
Sprinting upstairs because yeah. all of our bedrooms are on the second floor. Uh-huh. We'd go sprinting upstairs. Yeah. And she would, one time I remember the closet has those bifold doors uh-huh. and she was between the wall and the closet facing the wall. And you could tell she just didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And again, you're just there like with a seizure. You're yeah. just there making sure that they don't hurt themselves.
Right.
Weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No memory the next day.
So night terrors can affect people of any age, but they're much more common in young children than adolescents or adults, and usually between the ages of 4 to 12 years old, and they will resolve in most cases spontaneously by the time they're teenagers or they reach puberty. Although recent research shows, well, here's the most common age for night terrors, 1.5 years old.
That's wild.
Because
you
don't. 1.5, yeah.
At 1.5, what do you have to even be terrified of? No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Just wow. everything is larger than you.
Fran's their parent. I mean,
how challenging,
terrifying.
Though. Like, that's your baby.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be so hard as a parent.
It would be.
Most adolescents who have night terrors experience them when they were younger and will outgrow these episodes. What was that, Brody?
Sorry, the chair.
Yeah. Oh, hey, listeners, that was the chair.
It was the
yes,
chair.
I used air quotes. Yep. If we could open the door and get some air flowing, that would be great.
No.
Fran can't smell. She's fine.
I'm good.
Anywho, most of them experience them when they're younger and they will outgrow them as they moved into adulthood. New onset of night terrors in teenagers may be related to trauma or a psychiatric disorder. So I'm guessing what we're saying here is those two aren't necessarily related. Just because you have night terrors as a kid, you're not going to, if they show up in an adolescent, it could be something different.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
So in certain social settings, like if a kid is going to a sleepover or a summer camp, a teen who has a history of night terrors may feel some anxiety, and it could help if you consult with a doctor to help identify like what are the triggers that may be attached to this, or are there any other health conditions going on that you're not aware of?
As if you don't have enough to worry about when yeah. you're at those awkward ages.
Right.
Am I going to wake up and freak everybody else yeah. out? Boy, that's great.
Yeah.
Only about 2.2% of adults experience night terrors. Oh, your mom.
She had them when she was young.
Oh, she was young, yeah.
Oh, no, I thought you remembered her.
No,
oh, okay.
I never woke up to her screaming bloody yeah. murder.
Unless so. It was like the night terrors I have with Jim. Then maybe. Okay. Welcome to the show, Becky. Again, only about 2.2% of adults experience night terrors, and very few people over the age of 65, because they don't sleep, right, Fran?
Right.
Report having night terrors.
For sure.
Miss 6 a.m. text. That's what I'm going to...
6 a.m.? She's already been up for 3 hours.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to change your name to in my phone.
Oh, that's a good idea.
6 a.m. text.
6 a.m. pain in my ass. Yeah. P.O.S.
Yep.
Oh, but P-O-A. Do you like how she will also text at 11? The woman doesn't sleep.
Hey, I'm flexible like that, right? Adults with a childhood history of night terrors, like your mother, may have a recurrence of the episodes triggered by stress, sleep deprivation, or the development of yet another sleep disorder. Perfect. Let's just pile those suckers on.
One on top of another. Sleep terrors in adults may be of a particular concern due to the greater risk of injury to oneself or others if violent behavior occurs during the episode. That'd be scary.
Yeah, it really would. So like other parasomnia, so a parasomnia is a sleep disorder.
So fancy.
I know it. There is some evidence that night terrors have a genetic component and are more likely to occur in individuals who have a family history. So Brody, maybe one of your kids could develop it. They are
so
more
far so good.
Thanks for that.
Good. Because they are more common in people who have other sleep disorders.
And insomnia runs in our family. I mean, going way back, it runs in our family. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure. For example, don't know anything about this one. Obstructive sleep apnea is present in more than half the children who are referred to doctors for sleep terrors. Well, that's really interesting because Allison did have like adenoid issues. Mm. But it was a long time before we got her tonsils out and her adenoids.
I was going to say, Did she get her adenoids out?
When she was 17, I think. So,
oh, my gosh.
Yeah, we went a long time.
Yeah. Well,
we are all learning so much about Allison on this episode.
Yes, yeah, you're no kidding.
You're welcome,
no
Pumpkin.
No secrets, yeah.
You're welcome, Pumpkin, as if she listens. there is no significant association between night terrors and psychological disorders. Okay, did you hear that?
Yes.
Miss Pessy Speaker?
Yes.
I don't remember her name, but whatever.
Yeah.
So here are some factors that might trigger a parasomnia episode. Fever. Sleep deprivation, separation anxiety. Boy, you're giving me all of these. Mm-hmm. Periods of emotional distress or conflict. Disruption of a sleep schedule. I'm just thinking like everybody goes through these.
Yeah.
Certain medications, alcohol use and abuse, migraine headaches, or a head injury.
Red rum, red rum.
People are going to hear that in their sleep tonight.
I know. I just did watch The Shining, by the way. I've never seen the movie The Shining.
No way.
What?
Yeah, I've never seen it.
Well, good for you.
But it's Halloween, so I usually pick out one scary movie per year because that's all I can take. But you know what? I was disappointed because the N-word was used in the movie and now it's canceled in my mind.
Have you ever watched Poltergeist?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Not Poltergeist. No.
This house the is clean.
The Exorcist.
They're, yes.
Now,
yes.
They have the new one coming out.
I know they have
month.
A new one coming out.
A reboot?
I love the old one, though. That is scary.
Remember, that's when my Nana thought she was going to watch Moses in the Exodus, and it was The Exorcist.
That's right.
Who does that?
Goodness.
Oh, Nana. That was an eye-opener for sure. When should you go to a doctor?
I just pictured, is Charlton Heston in this? What is happening? This seems set in modern day.
Oh, gosh. No kidding. When should you go to a doctor? When episodes occur two or more times per week. If an episode resulted in an injury or a near injury. If night terrors are accompanied by sleepwalking or sleep talking, which most are, aren't they? Well, I think a high number of them. Yeah. A person has disrupted sleep and or daytime sleepiness or problems functioning, or when sleep terrors begin in early adolescence or adulthood. So you're not really supposed to worry about it as much when you have a toddler and a little, but by the time you're a teen, you should probably consult with a doctor.
Yeah. We've already kind of talked about this, but should you wake up a child who's having nightmares? No. When they're having a night terror, it's natural to want to, but it's best to stay close by and ensure they don't fall and hurt themselves. Attempts to wake them up, as Fran said earlier, may result in physical injury to you or them. And just remind yourself, most of these episodes are short and your child will fall quickly back to sleep.
So if somebody or a child is having night terrors repeatedly, you got it like you did with Allison. Make sure the child's bedroom is safe. Remove any dangerous items.
Oh, no, we didn't do that.
Oh, you didn't? Yeah. You just let you open the doors and windows and said, how about it?
Yeah. I mean, we watched her. But
oh, right. We watched her fall.
Here's a razor blade just in case.
Oh, my gosh. Have we not learned anything about me as a parent?
Oh,
no.
Man.
But that's a great idea and everybody should do it.
Right. And you know what? I can see people forgetting it, but like if you get a babysitter or like grandma's babysitting, yes. You need to let other caregivers know, oh, by the way, this is a thing. So this is what you should do if it happens.
That's a really good idea. Treatment may not be needed for children who experience night terrors less than twice a month. And most children will naturally outgrow these episodes as they get older.
Hey, Becky, why is the Northern State University graduate program in counseling so awesome?
I could go on forever, but let's talk about the fact that you can get a clinical degree where you can work in private practice or an agency, where you can get a school counseling degree on the school track, where you can work in a school as private school, parochial school, public school, any school you want to. And then my favorite.
What?
Forensic counseling.
Super cool. Yes. But is it KCREB approved?
It is KCREB approved. And you're like, what does that mean? You know what? It means that it has the gold standard of grad schools.
Super awesome. But can I afford it? Because I don't have a lot of money.
It's okay. If you go to northern.edu, you can apply for some scholarships. They have a couple of counseling specific scholarships in addition to some other really fantastic scholarships that a guidance counselor or a admissions counselor can help you with.
Awesome. Be Northern, unleash your potential, baby.
Okay, so just from a biological or evolutionary biology perspective, right? Like, what purpose does this serve? Like, why is it only or mostly young children? And why? I mean,
well, more of a question for your wife who's gone through medical school.
Yeah. She don't know shit. I'm sorry. My question did not revolve around the vagina, so she don't. She can't help me at all.
She's good with uteruses too. I don't know. I wonder if it's a natural discharge, maybe of anxiety, or maybe it's just a way of like, you know, when kids have all this pent up energy, who the hell knows? It's a safe place to discharge some extra energy or anxiety,
or just neurons firing weird, man.
It's crazy.
It is.
So what should we do to help? Do things to improve your kids' sleep habits, like their quality of sleep, put them on a regular sleep schedule. Mm-hmm. So a therapist can help you with this in addition to helping you set up a plan to prevent a night terror. Because keep in mind, there's a certain time they happen, and it's usually within the first 3 to 4 hours of sleep.
Yep. And in some cases, there are medications that can be considered for children with persistent night terrors. And so visit with your doctor to rule out any other medical conditions that might be contributing. And nobody wants to put their kids on meds, but it is something to think about if they're happening often.
Right.
So we put our son on melatonin because he has this long running con that he says, I don't sleep. Like I lay there and I act like I'm sleeping, but I'm not sleeping, guys. Mm. And we'll take pictures of him. He goes, no, I just have my eyes closed. I knew you were there the whole time. Anyway,
I love that kid. Know.
So anyway, we put him on melatonin. Obviously he does sleep, but we put him on melatonin so that he can stay asleep. Cause he was coming in, and this was like 2 weeks ago, but I'm watching TV and him and Lily come out. So my oldest and my youngest, and I said, what's going on, guys? You got to be in bed. And Lily goes, I don't know. He's got something to ask you. And I said, what's up? And he looks at me just blank and then starts to take off his shirt. I said, what are you doing? And he's like all distressed. He's like, I'm getting ready for school. I'm like, no.
Oh.
No, you got to put your shirt back on. So I put him back. He didn't remember a thing.
Wow.
So
that's funny.
That melatonin is, it's no joke.
It's the trick.
Well, and you know, we talked about it being biological. When you said that, it reminded me, I slept walk. I slept walked all the time. I very often didn't remember it. But one time I remember waking up and I'm on the couch curled up next to my dad and we're Johnny Carson's on. And I had no idea how I got there and why he didn't kick my ass and send me back to bed. I don't know. But but it was just really weird. But I would do that often.
Yeah.
Grew out of it, though. Thank goodness.
Yeah. Okay. So you have an Apple Watch on, right?
Yep.
If you sleep in it, what does it tell you about your sleep?
I don't know. I've never done it because that's the time when you charge things, right?
But that's what I do too. Yeah.
I do have an app that will listen to you, mm-hmm. and then it can kind of determine like how well you sleep, and it'll record if you sleep talk, which I don't, but so I've used that, and it's, I mean, it kind of tells you what.
You should put it on your son without the melatonin then and just see what happens. Like what monitor, like yeah,
He's fine. I'm sure he gets up early, but we're not worried about him sleeping per se. But.
Yeah. I'd just be curious. Yeah. Like what is he really? Yeah. Because I think oftentimes what we perceive is happening and what's really happening doesn't always match.
Right.
Well, maybe I think Fran's skirting the issue. You obviously need to send him in for some sort of disorder where they put electrodes on his mm-hmm. brain and study him. And
I've done that. I've gone in for a sleep study. It was years ago and now have a CPAP and it's the best. I don't even nap without it. Like it's yeah. mm-hmm. she said I was sleeping maybe a third of the night.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you're waking up tired and just mm-hmm. dragging ass throughout the day, go get a sleep study.
Go get one.
For sure.
I didn't even finish my sleep study. She was basically like, yeah, you're fucked in the middle of the night.
I've seen enough, ma'am. You can go home.
Yes. I went home at like 4:30 in the morning. She's like, yeah, we got it. We're good.
Wow. So a sleep specialist can help you identify whether there's an underlying cause that can be treated, like you said, with CPAP or prescribed therapy. And then if you do go sometimes to a sleep specialist, they'll say keep a sleep diary, which mm-hmm. I would think in that case, an Apple Watch or something like it would help. And this is where you are really kind of considering how is my quality of sleep affecting my quality of life, which mm-hmm. is huge.
Huge. Yep. They may ask for information from a bed partner or family member who can describe the night terror episodes. Some individuals may be referred for a sleep study, like Brody talked about, to further evaluate and diagnose any underlying concurrent sleep disorders. And what they do now, I think most places do now, is they will send you home with a monitor that mm-hmm. you hook yourself up to. And then kind of based on what that says, then they're like, okay, come in with the 49,000 electrodes hooked up to legs to see if you have restless leg syndrome. It's pretty thorough. Mm. And then they go, just sleep as normal.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I'd never sleep. I don't think I could do it.
Actually, I said, do I get to take my trazodone? She's like, absolutely. I'm like, game on. Let's do it.
Oh, yeah. But then, I don't know. I couldn't do it. But whatever. Okay, what is sleep paralysis? This is the other one we're covering in this fascinating episode.
Have you ever had sleep paralysis?
No.
Have you ever had sleep paralysis?
I mean, doesn't your body put you in a state of paralysis so that you don't act out your dreams?
Oh, look, you're deep today.
No, this is something different.
I have had sleep paralysis.
And that's terrifying.
I freaking hate it. I haven't had it in a long time, but it's awful.
Yes, I have heard it. It can be absolutely terrifying. Mm-hmm. And this reminds me, maybe I'm going too far in the Halloween thing, but it's like, you know, you hear people that say like they've been visited by people that are having sex with them in the middle of the night.
Oh, and God,
like
that's
that
terrible.
Kind of stuff. You've never heard that?
No, I have, but how awful.
No, that's just called a wet dream. That's a different type of sleep disorder.
Oh, God.
I can't with you, too.
Generally pleasant, I mean, for most of the victims.
Oh, my God. I cannot with you, too. Geez.
All right.
No, but for real, doesn't your body, like, so that you don't act out your dreams, doesn't your body like put you into some kind of paralysis?
Yes. But this is next level.
This is
next level. Because
it's like you're awake, right? Or something
because
like that?
Because with what you're talking about is like normal sleep, right?
Right.
But this is like you're asleep, but you think you're awake, but you're asleep, but you can't move, but you think you're awake.
Okay, let me define it.
Okay.
Sleep paralysis is a brief loss of muscle control known as atonia that happens just after falling asleep or waking up. Hallucinations during episodes of sleep paralysis are also common. So you might perceive there's a dangerous person mm-hmm. or presence in the room.
Someone having sex with you.
Yes, see? Feelings of movement like flying or out of body sensations, chest pressure feelings where I've had clients say I felt like somebody was literally sitting on my chest or like I couldn't breathe. I was suffocating.
So it's weird. Mine, I could tie it back to what would cause it, I think, very informally studying this. But I used to love to sleep with an electric blanket. Mm-hmm. And when I got too warm, it seemed to be anytime I got too hot, like if I didn't turn it down appropriately, I would have one. And it was always there was an intruder in the room. Mm-hmm. And I kept trying to, everyone was the same. I would try to turn on the light mm-hmm. to see what was there. I would try to scream.
And you couldn't.
Nothing.
Yeah.
But I thought I was awake, but I was really asleep.
That's scary.
It's awful. And because it's connected to rapid eye movement, or REM, the stage of deep sleep, or stage of sleep cycle, sleep paralysis is considered to be a REM parasomnia. Hmm. That's fancy.
So yeah, it is. So there are a couple of types of paralysis, Becky Boo. What are they?
So there's isolated sleep paralysis, when the episodes are not connected to an underlying diagnosis of narcolepsy. And narcolepsy is a neurological disorder that prevents the brain from properly controlling wakefulness and often leads to sleep paralysis. Or there can be recurrent sleep paralysis, which involves multiple episodes over time. Have you ever known anybody with narcolepsy?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not fun either. That's a rough one.
No. And that can be really dangerous if you're driving. A lot of times that's when it can be really dangerous.
Yes.
Okay. So what does sleep paralysis feel like? The main symptom is atonia, like we said, the inability to move the body. And during an episode, a person, like you said, feels awake. And they're aware that I have no control over my muscles. I can't move, which is terrifying.
And in about 75% of sleep paralysis episodes, they involve hallucinations. So that's the perception of something that's not actually there, like my intruder. Mm-hmm. They can be visual or auditory. And as with atonia, hallucinations can occur when falling asleep or when waking up, and they can last from a few seconds to around 20 minutes. But I will tell you, when you're in the midst of it, it feels like hours.
Forever. Yeah. So sleep paralysis can occur at any age, but first symptoms often show up in childhood, adolescence, or usually between the ages of 7 to 25. The exact cause is unknown.
Do you like that beautiful age range we gave again? 7 to 25.
Yeah,
somewhere sometime in there. Between birth and death. Right. This could happen.
Right?
People with PTSD, or post-traumatic stress disorder, anxiety disorders, including panic disorder, appear to be more likely to experience sleep paralysis, and those with a history of abuse or neglect. Stopping alcohol or antidepressants can also lead to REM rebound, which may cause sleep paralysis too. That's interesting.
Hmm. You know what I'm thinking about right now that has nothing to do with this?
Hmm.
Well, kind of. There was a movie called, I think it was called The Fourth Kind. It was a scary movie, which include all of the things. Like, I think it was the alien invasion and demon possession, which is a nice combination,
right? Sounds right up your alley, actually.
It's right up there.
I know the movie. I haven't seen it.
But it was one of those where it just seems like it's a documentary, or you're like, you're filming it. You know what I mean? And you're like, oh my God, is this actual footage? Right. Yeah. And so Camille made me watch this stupid ass movie. And so afterwards, well, I put her to bed and I'm Googling, is that freaking real? Right. I was up all night. I don't know why this made me think of it, but then I'm surprised I didn't go into sleep paralysis after that bullshit.
Oh, man.
I know it. All right. Studies have found a higher risk in people with a family history of sleep paralysis, but no specific genetic basis has been identified.
So before we talk about treatments, you just made me think about... Sorry, I moved my mic there. Is that better?
Yes, that's very good. Okay. Thank you.
I'll just sit here and hunch.
Just breathe.
Yes, that's perfect.
Thanks, bro.
Oh, God. I'm going to barf in my own mouth.
Right now, as baby girl is in her final year of sports, one of the things we always yell towards the end of a competition is, finish it.
Oh.
Because when she was little, Allison was reading her a story, and she thought Grace was asleep, and she's creeping, you know, towards the doorway, and all of a sudden, Grace, eyes closed, goes, finish it. Ellie's like, I almost shit my pants, but I went and finished the book.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, that's what we yell at her now.
That's awesome.
There are treatments for sleep paralysis. A first step in treating it is to talk with a doctor in order to identify and address underlying problems that may be contributing to the frequency or even the severity of episodes. This might mean treatment for narcolepsy or steps to better manage sleep apnea.
So, as is common with anything that is out of the norm, many people don't know that sleep paralysis is relatively common, and then they're ashamed and they feel like they're crazy. So just going to a medical professional and hearing them say, hey, this is more common, and normalizing it can really help you feel, I don't know, just less out of the norm. But, you know, that's the thing we're dealing with our podcast.
Yes.
We don't want people to feel like this is shameful. This is weird, you know, like
shit happens, man.
It sure does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So improving your sleep hygiene, which is how well you take care of yourself to get ready to sleep, is a common focus in preventing sleep paralysis. It refers to your bedroom setting, your habits that influence sleep. We'll often talk about caffeine consumption. What were you watching before you went to bed? When did you turn things off? Stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So here are some examples of healthy sleep tips that can help improve your sleep hygiene and sleep consistency. Number one, follow the same schedule, people, for going to bed and waking up. And guess what? That includes weekends.
I suck at that.
And summer breaks.
I suck at all of that.
I know.
Keeping a set pre-bed routine that helps you get comfortable and relaxed. I'm good at that one.
Yay, are you? Okay, good. Outfitting your bed with the best mattress and best pillow for your needs. And we have a, Mark and I have an ongoing joke. Well, he thinks that's funny because no matter what, he will always say, "You stole my pillow. I was sleeping perfectly fine and you stole my pillow." And I'm like, "You are so full of shit," because I'm so OCD. I put a different color pillowcase on my pillow because I don't want his sweaty head anywhere near my pillow.
You're hilarious. I just bought a few months ago a pillow that has just really changed my world.
What is it?
So I was staying at the Hyatt place that we stayed at in Sioux Falls when we did that. So there, and I fell in love with that pillow. So I Googled, what brand pillows does Hyatt Place use?
Yeah.
And they use, folks, buckle up, pillows.com.
No.
And so I ordered a down alternative pillow. Mm-hmm. It is fucking amazing.
Is it really?
I love it so much.
Oh,
yeah.
Good for you.
It wasn't even terribly expensive. Huh. So yeah, I loved it.
Good.
So if you're at a hotel and you love the pillow, just Google the shit out of it.
There you go.
Or just stuff it in your suitcase.
Or you can do that. Brody likes to live on the edge.
Right.
Setting up your bedroom to have limited intrusion from light or noise.
Reducing your consumption of booze and caffeine, especially in the evening.
Now, wait a minute. I want to go back to limited intrusion from light or noise. Are you guys sleeping with your windows open right now?
No.
Okay.
Allergies, man.
I opened our windows last night because it was so cool.
To let the smoke from Canada in?
I love my Canadians. It's no different than Thanksgiving growing up, smoke from Canadians.
Right.
So here we are. But no, so I thought, oh, this will be nice. And I closed the curtain, but not the blind. And I'm laying there and I'm just about asleep. And as we live in Aberdeen, which is the hub city for trains.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking trains.
Oh,
I'm like, nope, this is not happening.
Yep.
Nope, window closed.
Yeah,
our AC went out earlier, like right at the beginning of the summer, and so we had our windows open for a bit. And I tell you what, those birds get up early.
Oh, they do,
gosh.
And they don't shut.
And they don't shut up. No, and that time of year, it's all grackles here, and so the grackles are just
and they're just awful.
Yeah. Yep.
It's also good to put away your electronic devices, including cell phones, for at least a half hour. Does that include oscillators?
None of your business.
Okay, I was just asking for a friend.
I think oscillators help the sleep.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah. They really do.
Yeah.
Said a friend. Okay.
I read about it.
Therapy can help too. Improving sleep hygiene is frequently incorporated into a certain kind of therapy, cognitive behavior therapy for insomnia. This is a type of talk therapy that works to reframe negative thoughts and emotions that detract from sleep. So addressing your mental health issues like anxiety and PTSD in therapy can be very helpful.
Some medications are known to suppress REM sleep, and these may also help stop sleep paralysis. These medications can have side effects, though, and so they can cause a rebound in REM sleep when someone stops taking them. So for those reasons, it's important. Talk to your doctor. Ask about any side effects before going on something.
So, okay, Brody, off the top of your head, can you think of any movie that revolves around a sleep disorder? Time's up.
Wow.
I'm trying to think of the name. There's a movie, I think, starring Jessica Alba, and it's not a sleep disorder per se, but it's about people who go under anesthesia and then, but they can still feel everything.
Ew.
Yeah, that's not one.
That would scare me.
No, nope,
Awakenings, I believe, maybe is the name. But no, I can't.
Okay. Insomnia. Do you remember that movie?
That's a great title.
That's with Al Pacino. Mm-mm.
I didn't see that one.
I didn't see it either. But I did see Fight Club.
Wait, let's not talk about it.
What?
Fight Club.
Why?
Because the first rule of Fight Club.
Someone's never seen Fight Club.
I've seen it, but I don't remember it, but I do remember Ed Norton.
I don't remember it. That's like the whole crux of the movie is you don't talk about Fight Club. You know what the second rule is? You don't talk about Fight Club.
Yes. Got it.
Oh, man.
Okay, that really was a good movie, though. It was really effed up, but it was good. Okay, Inception with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, what?
I didn't.
No. You've never seen Inception? Mm-mm. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, I had little kids. I had no life. What was I going to do?
It's fine for little kids. I mean, they're not going to get it, but...
Like, Becky gives me a look like, what? Is, I know, what kind of father is
he? Well, no, I'm looking at you like, you've seen it. Is it really okay for kids? Like,
I wouldn't put it in.
There's some violence, but it's not like... I guess I'm more concerned about sex with my kids, but it's... No, Inception is phenomenal.
Oh, I may have to take a look at it then. Yeah. You haven't let me down. You guys always give me recommendations and I check them out. I love them. So.
Okay.
And then finally, the sleepfoundation.org. So sleepfoundation.org.
Where the shrinks.
And that's a wrap.